Greetings, this is Jeff Riddle from Christ Reformed Baptist Church in Louisa, Virginia. This is an audio version of a book review that I have written. The book under review is by David C. Parker. It is titled Textual Scholarship and the Making of the New Testament. It was published by Oxford University Press in 2012, and it is 186 pages in length. My written review first appeared in the journal American Theological Inquiry, Volume 7, Number 1, in 2014, and it appeared on pages 81 to 84. Here now is the review. This book is an expanded edition of Parker's 2011 Lyell Lectures at Oxford University. Though relatively brief, it is densely packed with significant information and observations on the present state and future directions of New Testament textual scholarship from one of the discipline's chief contemporary practitioners and gatekeepers. The body of the book consists of five lectures or chapters, each of which is titled by its opening words. It is bookended by an introduction and conclusion. In Lecture 1, titled The General Procedures, Parker provides an introduction to a contemporary reappraisal of textual scholarship. He distinguishes between the work, a single form of text distilled from all the varied forms in which it is known, the text, the form in which the work appears in each manuscript, and the document, the manuscript in which the text is found. According to Parker, the New Testament is, and always has been, the result of a fusion of technology of whatever kind is in vogue and its accompanying theory. The New Testament, thus, is always evolving, and it will continue to change. Parker suggests the dictum, quote, that every written work is a process and not an object, end quote, page 21. Thus, Parker argues against, quote, the modern concept of a single authoritative original text, end quote, as what he calls, quote, a hopeless anachronism, end quote, page 24. Scholars must not think of the critical text as the original, but only as a recovery of what he calls the form of text from which the surviving copies are descended. In the language of Munster and Birmingham, this is the Ausgangstext, or initial text. The task of the New Testament philologist, then, according to Parker, quote, is not to recover an original authorial text, end quote, but simply, quote, to recover as exactly as may be the oldest recoverable form of the text beneath the manuscript copies, end quote, page 26. In Lecture 2, titled, What is a New Testament Manuscript?, Parker provides a survey of the scholarly study of the approximately 5,606 manuscripts in the New Testament, including papyri, majuscules, minuscules, and lectionaries, included in the Authoritative Institute for New Testament Textual Research, LISTA. Most intriguingly, Parker calls attention to a notable weakness in the available data, suggesting that in the past, scholars went in the wrong direction by inconsistently including, but largely excluding from the LISTA, the many commentary manuscripts, including Catena manuscripts that collect excerpts from various commentaries. Parker concludes that the current cataloging system is inadequate, while also acknowledging that no system will work perfectly and that there will be anomalies. More radically, Parker argues that scholarship abandoned what he calls the modern concept of a New Testament manuscript, which is based on the theological model of canonicity. He concludes, quote, at this point, I realize that what I am propounding is that there is no such thing as a manuscript of the New Testament. The New Testament is not a work, but a collection of works. Instead, I propose that we should begin to classify manuscripts according to the basic categories of works, end quote, page 63. In lecture 3, titled Understanding How Manuscripts Are Related, Parker turns to discuss how early Christian manuscripts are to be compared. He notes three approaches to comparison. 1, by physical evidence. 2, by artwork. And 3, by textual analysis. The latter of these is, of course, the most developed in the field. Parker first traces the development of the genealogical method beginning with Bingle until almost the present day. Particular attention is given to evaluation of the method of Westcott and Hort and their argument for the superiority of the so-called neutral text. Parker concludes that the Westcott-Hort theory was based on, quote, a totally inadequate amount of evidence, end quote, page 82, and that, quote, the theory does not deserve the reverence which has been accorded it, end quote, page 83. In fact, he argues, quote, the time has come to abandon it completely, not because it was wrong, but because we can do better, end quote, page 83. In place of the old genealogical method, Parker advocates for the Münster method or the coherence-based genealogical method. Pages 84 to 95 provide a detailed description of this method. In Lecture 4, titled Editing the Greek New Testament, Parker discusses the process of creating a modern critical edition of the New Testament. He acknowledges that the initial text of a critical edition is what he calls an ideal rather than a real text, since it was never the text of an actual manuscript. Parker strikingly describes the modern editor as, quote, the person who confronts the terrifying anarchy of competing variants, end quote, and becomes, quote, in effect the scholarly world's exorcist who drives out the legion of demons and leaves the work sitting and clothed and in its right mind, end quote, pages 103 to 104. For Parker, a critical edition is a narrative or an attempt to make sense of the facts. Parker then proceeds to argue for the benefits of the Editio Critica Major, for which he is serving as an editor, as the project most likely to produce what he calls the first truly critical edition of the New Testament. He notes in particular that the project, begun by Kurt Aland, will be realized in a more thoroughgoing way than he could have imagined due to technological advances. Parker confidently predicts that it will be completed in about 20 years, by about the year 2032, and become the basis for future Greek handbooks, both the UBS and the Nestle Aland editions, as well as almost all translations of the New Testament into the vernacular languages, and that it may last for as long as 150 years. In Lecture 5, titled The New Testament of the Future, Parker reflects on how the current digital revolution will impact the transmission of the New Testament. He observes, quote, the new world offered by the computer has already had at least as profound an effect on what we do as did the introduction of printing half a millennium ago, end quote, page 125. According to Parker, the most significant event in modern-day humanities research is the development of mass digitization. No longer must a person physically visit a library, university, or museum to see a manuscript, but he can view and examine it online. Parker points in particular to recent efforts to provide a digital version of Codex Sinaiticus online to illustrate this advance. The result of this digital revolution will be what he calls the democratization of fields which have hitherto only been accessible to a few people with the resources and opportunities. Parker even speculates that in the future, users will be able to build their own critical text. Parker's lectures reveal many important developments and directions in the contemporary academic study of the texts of the New Testament. It also presents several concerns, dilemmas, and ecclesiological questions. Parker tells us, for example, that the quest for the original text of the New Testament has been abandoned. The New Testament is a process and not an object. Along the way, he even suggests that the traditional concept of the New Testament canon might be passé. If, however, the New Testament has no standard and stable text that accurately reflects what was written by the apostles and apostolic associates and no defined canonical boundaries, how can it possibly serve as authoritative scripture for the church? Noteworthy are Parker's criticisms and calls for the overthrow of the influential Westcott and Hort method. In his conclusion, Parker shares that one of his most surprising finds in preparing these lectures, quote, was the realization of my dissatisfaction with Westcott and Hort and the dominance of their theories for so long, end quote, page 147. Parker is critical both of confessional Christians who make the received text their standard and of Westcott and Hort's neutral text, and he speaks glowingly of efforts to make the Editio Critica Maior the standard critical edition of the New Testament. It should be noted, however, that this is a project apparently undertaken purely in academia and extra ecclesia. One might well ask if it is wise for the church to hand over custody of her scriptures to the academy. Odd, too, are the contradictory impulses in this effort. On one hand, Parker says, in good postmodern fashion, that he does not want, quote, to foster the myth of an authoritative and definitive single version of the work, end quote. But is this not precisely what a critical edition is designed to do? We might ask if there is any cause for alarm at the brave new world that Parker sees on the horizon for the transmission of the text of the New Testament. Indeed, there are amazing benefits of access that are coming with the digitization of the New Testament manuscripts. One is left wondering, however, if the result might be less democracy than anarchy. If, as Parker envisions the possibility, each individual might be able to build his own critical text, will there exist an authoritative New Testament that might serve as a clear communal standard for doctrine and practice? In his conclusion, Parker considers the irony of the fact that he offered these lectures in 2011, the 400th anniversary of the King James Version, musing on, quote, the impact of multiple privatized versions on the concept of authorized versions to be read in churches, end quote, page 146. The question, however, is whether such a development should be considered an advance for the Christian movement and its New Testament, or potentially its unraveling and downfall. Here ends the review. You can receive audio book reviews like this one, Word Magazine podcasts, and sermons by subscribing to Christ Reformed Baptist Church's sermonaudio.com feed on iTunes by searching for Christ Reformed Baptist Church. For video material, you can subscribe to the Word Magazine channel on youtube.com. You can also find written book reviews, notes, and articles on my blog, jeffriddle.net. Take care and God bless.